I'm Andy Borowitz, in for Leonard Lopate. Hallucinogenic mushrooms have long been considered essential for enjoying the music of Pink Floyd. But recently, a research team at NYU has been experimenting with using psilocybin to help cancer patients come to terms with their mortality. The data is preliminary, but the researchers have noted that the vast majority of their patients have exhibited an immediate and sustained reduction in their anxiety. We're joined now by reporter Rock Morin, whose article in The Atlantic is called Prescribing Mushrooms for Anxiety. Wow. And I'm pleased to welcome him to the Leonard Lopate Show. Hello, Rock.
Hi, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Why are researchers looking at using psychedelic drugs like mushrooms to treat severe anxiety when we've already got so many anti-anxiety medications out there that are being prescribed?
That's a great question. Well, you know, these drugs have been used long before Pink Floyd ever came on the scene. There's a history that dates back at least 9,000 years, as we can see from cave paintings in Spain and Algeria. Also, the Aztecs and Mexicans, indigenous cultures, use them. So there's a long history of usage. And we find that a lot of the drugs that are currently available, they just don't work in a lot of cases. There's some intractable problems, anxiety principle among them, that where these drugs just mask the disease, but they don't really attack the problem itself.
Mm-hmm. You met with Dr. Stephen Ross, who's NYU's principal investigator doing this research. How did he first get interested in studying the effect of these mushrooms and psychedelic psilocybin on cancer patients' anxiety?
Yeah, he was interested in substance abuse and alcoholism and finding novel therapies because those are typically very difficult things to treat. And he came across research dating from the 1960s using LSD. He found, you know, in several of these studies, response rates up to 50%. So we're talking about elimination of alcoholism in 50%. Now, the methodology that was used back then isn't quite up to the standard that we use today, but the research was really shut down before it could fully blossom and before there could be adequate follow-up. So he thought that was a good place to start.
So elimination of alcoholism using hallucinogens, does that – I realize that the research is far from complete – but how did that work? I mean, did they administer it a few times and suddenly they weren't alcoholics anymore? Did they want to have more hallucinogens at that point or no? They were just clean?
Well, actually, interestingly enough, it was just a single dose therapy.
Really?
Yeah. And if you think about AA, you think about Bill Wilson, who actually became sober as the result of a hallucinogenic experience with a belladonna alkaloid that was administered in the 1930s. The idea behind AA is you get into contact with a higher power, right? Mm-hmm. And so hallucinogens have this ability to kind of create these mystical experiences that can form the foundation of that higher power idea.
Mm-hmm. And one dosage isn't enough to do any damage to the brain? Because I know that there are casualties of people who did a lot of this stuff in the 60s and 70s and did suffer some brain problems as a result.
Yeah, well, in a lot of those cases, there wasn't adequate screening of patients. And
right.
You're dealing with people who have pre-existing psychological conditions or predispositions, family history, mm-hmm. Drug abuse problems to begin with. And then the set and the setting of the experiments were not set up to bring out the best qualities of the drugs because these drugs amplify the good and the bad. So if you're in a frightening environment and so forth and you don't have adequate guidance, it can easily go awry. But we find that in the proper context, they can be incredibly healing and helpful.
So walk me through the actual study that Dr. Ross is doing. How much security is required to store the mushrooms? And does it seem silly to you? How it seems like they were really, these are like nuclear launch codes or something. But how did they do that?
Yeah, I think in some cases it's even, it was even more so, more secure than our nuclear sites. But they had a 2-ton safe that was in a highly restricted area. There had to be several people that were involved in getting access to the area. I was able to see the safe after, you know, a bit of wrangling. But the only substance in this 2-ton safe is the psilocybin. And it's weighed once a day, and three people sign off on it to make sure that the substance is still it hasn't been taken by anyone. So yes, it's very very impressive.
So I am talking. I'm sorry, I'm just still back on the mushrooms. I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate. I'm talking to Rock Morin, whose article in The Atlantic is called Prescribing Mushrooms for Anxiety. And we're talking about just that, about prescribing psychedelic medications, chemicals, to patients who are suffering from cancer to help them deal with their anxiety about their mortality. So in these studies, researchers are guiding patients through their psychedelic experiments. How does that work?
Yeah, so that's very important. That seems to be the crucial element. There are months of therapy sessions leading up to the actual dosing session. And these are therapy sessions that are designed to take the patient's history and to kind of talk about their narratives around cancer and around death. And then the idea of the dosing day is kind of to reform those narratives into something that's healthier. And then, of course, afterwards, there's kind of a debriefing period that goes along where these experiences are discussed and integrated into the patient's lives and narratives.
Well, it sounds kind of like they're almost doing talk therapy in advance of actually administering the drugs. Wouldn't the talk therapy in itself be a helpful thing? Would you have to take it to the next level of administering mushrooms after that?
Yeah, good question. A lot of the patients describe the experience of taking the psilocybin as being accelerated therapy. Mm-hmm. Some of them say something like, it feels like 5 years of therapy in a single day that occurs. So it accelerates it. And it also tends to break down people's barriers. Mm-hmm. And their resistance to certain thoughts and to kind of creative impulses that they have and creative ways to look at their lives and their problems.
What's an average session like when they do this?
Okay. Well, the patients come in at 9 o'clock in the morning. They're met by a male and a female therapist that will be with them for the next 8 hours. It's a full psychedelic workday. They're given a capsule inside of a chalice, and they perform a little ritual where they bind ropes together kind of to symbolize their interconnectedness. The patients are shown two drugs that they'll have access to throughout the experience. One is Zyprexa, which will immediately take them out of the psychedelic experience, and the other is Valium, which is an anti-anxiety medication. Mm-hmm. And then they put on an eye mask. They lie down on a couch, and they listen to about 6 hours of pre-selected music. This is music without lyrics, but it's sort of tribal. It's from around the world, and it kind of is a nod to the shamanic traditions that a lot of these studies borrow from.
Do patients ever have a bad trip?
It happens. And these are patients with high levels of anxiety to begin with, so you can
understandably
imagine.
Understandably, right? Yeah.
But a lot of the best work actually happens after these experiences are dealt with, these anxiety-ridden experiences, confrontations with death, instances where patients feel as if they have died or they feel like they're not breathing anymore. So it's critical to have the therapist there to talk them through that. And, these confrontations with their anxiety is what they're there for in the first place. So experiencing in that context is a very powerful way to deal with that.
How hard is it to get a license to do this kind of research? And where do the scientists actually go to get the mushrooms? Not that I want to know for any ulterior reasons, but where do they get – it seems like it would be a complicated thing.
It is. It's a long process. I think it took Dr. Ross 2 years. He had to go through the DEA, the FDA, various other oversight boards. But eventually it was issued. And the drug itself is manufactured by a company, I believe it's in Boston. Mm-hmm. But it must be a very interesting place to work. They make pretty much all of the psychedelic substances that are used in research in America and a lot of other places in the world.
A listener in Manhattan left a comment on our show page saying, I have had anxiety disorder for pretty much my whole life, and I had in all caps, terrifying experience with mushrooms. How is this even a consideration? Is the difference the clinical setting? Is that one reason why they feel they can proceed with this stuff?
Absolutely. I mean, that's critical, absolutely critical. As I mentioned before, these drugs can cause terrifying states and confrontations. Sure. With death and so forth. You need someone there who's familiar with what to expect. You need the preparation beforehand, and you need to be talked through these things.
You describe one patient who is named O.M. in the piece. How traumatic was his experience with cancer?
It's quite impressive. We're talking about a 22-year-old male who is diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma in his last year of pre-med. And this is a highly driven, highly motivated individual. But he was debilitated by his anxiety. He went through his chemo, and afterwards he found that he couldn't stop thinking about the possible return of his cancer. So he would always feel his neck. He would feel his lymph nodes continually, to the point where he developed calluses on his neck.
Wow.
And is continually palpating the lymph nodes, actually made them swell up all the more, which just fed into his anxiety. He came in with one of the highest levels of anxiety that the team had ever seen. It's a 21 out of 30 on this anxiety scale. And after a single dosing session, that anxiety dropped to zero, and it stayed at zero for 7 months.
Wow. Are there any theories as to why drugs like psilocybin would produce such long-lasting psychological effects and long after they've been metabolized?
Yeah, I was very curious about that myself. Dr. Ross talks about sort of a PTSD model for that. He points out that PTSD is caused in the negative sense by this hyperactivation of the amygdala, the emotional response in the brain, it's a highly memorable experience, and these are highly memorable positive experiences. So it's kind of like almost a positive form of PTSD that just lingers for years.
Now, psilocybin is found naturally in more than 200 species of mushrooms. Do we know what about the chemical itself makes people hallucinate?
Yes, it's believed to bind to a specific serotonin receptor, mm-hmm. Although, additional research still needs to be conducted.
The mushrooms that we're talking about were used in pre-contact cultures in the Americas, as you were referring to their older use. What were they used for in those cultures?
They were used ceremonially and in religious rituals. They were actually called by the Aztecs the flesh of the gods because they believed that it would put them in contact with those beings.
And they had a long history of use in Europe as well. How far back were people using them in Europe?
Right. So if we look at Spain, we're seeing the cave paintings that go back at least 9,000 years.
Yeah, you mentioned those cave paintings. What is in those cave paintings that made it so clear that people were on mushrooms when they were doing
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it's pretty clear. It's, we have these figures.
They look like album covers or what?
It would make a great album cover. We have figures that are dressed in elaborately with horns, antlers. And then they have the mushrooms themselves, which are surrounded by these sort of rays that go directly into the head of each of the participants.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, now we have an interesting call. Laura in Manhattan is calling. She took psilocybin in the study and had to drop out. So let's hear from her. Laura, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I don't want to I just wanted to sort of desensationalize the whole thing and make sure that people realize how incredibly valuable this can be.
Great.
I had to drop out of the study for reasons of some other medications that I had to take that would have interfered with the clarity of the results. But I did go through the first part, and there is a control so that one is psilocybin and one is a placebo, and I was fortunate to get the psilocybin. And you're extremely well prepared for this, as the author said, by months of therapy with two incredible therapists.
Mm-hmm.
And you're assured that there is no danger, that if anything medical or mental happens during the study, you feel completely safe. I learned some amazing things. I was very sorry that I couldn't experience the second part, even though it was a placebo. But I just want to say, without violating anybody's privacy or saying too much, that this is something that really, really should be explored. And any feeling that there's like a drug high or a, you know, and I'm a person who did a lot of hallucinogens in the day, you know, and recreationally. But this is really good. There's nothing, there's nothing funny about this.
No, I think when you see,
I hope this research can get funding. I hope that the prejudices against it will eventually be shot down, because it can be incredibly valuable. I mean, I am a person who had cancer, and it was really, really valuable to me. And they're doing amazing work. And this is the first sort of large study. So I just want to say that it's very, very valid and very serious stuff and very good stuff.
Yeah, I thank you so much, Laura. And I think when you see Rock's story in The Atlantic, you'll see that he does handle this in an extremely sober way, and it's full of really great information. And I urge everybody to check it out. I've been speaking with The Atlantic's Rock Morin about new research into whether hallucinogenic mushrooms can help cancer patients come to terms with their mortality. And we posted a link to his great story, Prescribing Mushrooms for Anxiety, on our show page. And Rock, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Andy.